Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Nation of Junkies? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery. Excited to talk with you for the next hour or so as we discuss UFC 280, which took place this past Saturday in Abu Dhabi. Stacked card, maybe the most stacked card on paper. We'll talk about how it played out. Not on paper. Also, got a glance over one on Prime 3. Lineker, one on Prime Video 3, Lineker versus Andrade, because we did have a title fight, supposedly. That was the plan. And yeah, of course, the latest news. A lot of stuff came out of UFC 280. A lot of news broke in the last 72 hours. So we'll go over all of that. And it's going to be a fun time here. Buckle up, Junkie Nation. Just seeing the Astros celebrate Goes as I'm doing the show here just still kind of rubs me the wrong way for anyone that's left over from that team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
They eliminated. They swept the Yankees, though. That's impressive. That's two games on their home turf. Their little turf. Yeah. Anyway, here we go, folks. So let's get right into it. UFC 280 took place this past Saturday night in Abu Dhabi. Two title fights, a lot of great fights featuring ranked fighters. And it was a great time. We had a watch along on Saturday. For those of you that joined us, thank you so much for hanging out with us. John Orlando was with us for most of it. Eric Nixick stopped by for a couple fights. So all in all, at the Sticky Paws Studio, great times. And a big shout out again to Sticky Paws Studio, specifically producer Austin. All right, so let's start at the top. Goes, Islam Makhachev is the new UFC undisputed lightweight champion. He defeated Charles Oliveira, submitted him in the second round. That's right, you heard it. He submitted Charles Oliveira, the owner of the most submissions in the UFC. But stuff like this goes down, man. It goes down. And so here we have it. Islam Makhachev, even though he hadn't fought top five, top three competition, he went straight into the title fight. And that was kind of what was really holding him back, although he did have a nice win streak to back it up. Boy, he showed everything of what we were told by Javier Mendez, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and maybe even the early promises by Abubakar Nurmagomedov, the late Mr. Nurmagomedov, Khabib's father.
Yeah, that performance, what impressed me the most and what I think made him successful in that fight was his patience. I think some of the guys that fought Oliveira before were just too aggressive, too much to try and get in there and make their point. And I feel like he just kind of took his time, looked for the right spots. And when he had his openings, he made them count. And he wasn't afraid to go to the ground with Oliveira as well. You know, he had that nice little hip toss. And then to be able to even think of trying to submit Charles Oliveira when maybe he could have just sat in that position and just landed some strikes, scored some points. He actually put his foot on the gas at the right time. And I thought that was pretty impressive of him, man. Charles Oliveira is no joke. We've seen what he's done to his opponents. I wouldn't say this is one of those situations where you go, hey, Charles Oliveira broke. I just think the better man won that night.
I would agree with all that. And so, first of all, let me correct myself. Abubakar Nurmagomedov is the middleweight that's a cousin of Khabib that fought on Saturday twice because he also fought Khamzat Chimaev in the stands, although apparently that bad blood's been cleaned up and cleared up. Abdulmanap is Khabib's dad. So respect to you, father. And he's the one that said that Islam Makhachev, along with his son, would both be world champions. And he's called it so far. And so, yeah, you know, There was one time where Makachev, if I'm really, really picking on him, you know, he kind of like there was some setups from Oliveira on his back, you know, whether it was the triangle or the elbows to the back or to his head from the bottom. So triangle or armbar setups that never really came close, but they were there. I think Islam Makhachev, you know, he had to think twice and he had to be patient and calm and then do the right tactics to either be both arms in or get out. But it didn't deter him. You know, how many times have you seen a fighter kind of go down that road with somebody who's noted on the ground and then it's like, no, get up. We're going to stand or we're just going to avoid the ground. Let's go. No, he was willing to go back down and engage because even though he knew it's dangerous, an MMA fight's dangerous. An MMA fight with not just Charles Oliveira, but anyone's dangerous for the most part. So he decided to just do his thing and, you know, work from the top like he always does, ground and pound. And if the nail opening's there, it's there. He went for that arm triangle. And the first time it wasn't there, but then he went for it again. And right away, Oliveira tapped. Did he break? Probably not. But I think Oliveira also knew, boy, this is another animal here, because as we've noted in the pre-fight, he's been knocked down a lot. His chin gets buzzed. And so you can look at it two ways. A, he's got a good chin, because most people that get buzzed like that would be out. Or B, he doesn't have a good chin, because some people take those shots and don't fall back. You know, they're still standing in front of you. But when you're winning, and you're winning titles, then we tend to side with his chin's great, you know. But I always knew something's not right. Like, he's getting knocked down. There's something there. Now, there were times when Makhachev would throw some nice strikes, and there were times where the way he was swinging his arms looked really, really average. So I thought if Charles Oliveira can just avoid the ground and just stand, I think the cleaner strikes will come into play at some point. But it seemed like Charles Oliveira was doing everything possible, goes, to make it easy for the fight to be engaged in close quarters and for him to wind up yet again being mauled against the cage or just put on his back. So yeah. He had like a really lazy standing knee, you know, jumping knee, kicks that weren't really too threatening. I think I remember a couple calf kicks that were pretty nice. I hope I'm not getting the fight mixed up, but there just wasn't really much going on. And, you know, halfway through the fight goes, a thought did go through my head. It was that picture of like 20 or 30 Brazilians standing over him, and it looked like they were praying for somebody who was in a coma. But what had happened, he had just had that weight cut, and so maybe it was really serious, or it was just getting to the end. You know, I could be making something out of nothing. I don't know, but I did think to that and just go, wow, I wonder if this was rough. Now, I was following this thing pretty good because I'm a little bit of a night owl over here on the Pacific time zone. So there was times where like 10 p.m., 11 p.m., 12 a.m., I was seeing stuff either on our group chat, the junkie group chat, or just stuff on social media that was saying he's doing fine. He's already made weight. He's ahead of the schedule. He'll be fine. And to his credit, he came in at 154.5. So did Islam Makhachev. So that part did hold up. But I did see that picture, you know, and it just looked like I've never seen one like that, like unless someone's like in a precarious situation. And then, as the fight was unfolding and he was looking flat, I was thinking, I wonder if that was it.
I had a similar thing, but it was over the lion that he was walking. All I could think of was, man, if the shoe was on the other foot, I think Islam Makhachev would say, fool, I ain't got no time to be walking lions. I got a title fight coming up. Maybe I'll do that shit afterwards. But right now, I got a fight. You don't ask me to walk no lions. That's exactly what I feel like a champion's mentality is like. And that's us nitpicking, man, really.
But maybe we're not. Maybe we're not. Maybe we're not. Maybe all those things add up. Maybe. Okay, here's another thing. Maybe having 20-some or 30-some people with you everywhere, maybe that's a stress in itself. A lot of fighters just isolate themselves. You know, they really segregate, and it's maybe a group of 5, 10 max or something. That includes your really, really close family. I remember Anderson Silva, when he would have those open workouts, man, and he would just bust in with like 30 people and Steven Seagal and Ronaldo, the soccer player, you know, and so each event became bigger and bigger. And that's why I think Anderson was clowning so much in that Chris Weidman fight. You know, they talk about these guys being artists painting on a canvas, right? And so each time they want to do something so grand because their star is shining so bright. And then somewhere along the lines, you just lose focus of what you're in. It's just me against him. You know, this isn't like the Super Bowl, the World Cup. There's no halftime show. There's no parades per se. Like maybe after when it's all done, sure. But until then, dude, it's got to be like Apollo's gym or the one in L.A., you know, the one that Apollo trained Rocky in. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Nitty and gritty and dirty and smelly and all distractions off to the side.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree that that's just how you have to do it. That's what makes these guys so tough. When you think about Islam, when you think of Habib, those are attributes that both those guys had. I feel like if you were to go on Islam's Instagram or whatever, you're not going to see him take a week to go on to Six Flags or play a little roulette or anything like that. Like, he'll probably be back in the gym on Monday because that's just what they're conditioned to do. And that's very, very unique because he's going to be cashing some really big checks. And he just doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to get out of hand or anything like that. So I expect all this momentum to just continue on to the next guy.
I'm going to look at Instagram right now. Because I don't want to talk out of my ass either. Islam Makhachev, holy cow, he's already up to 4.9 million followers.
Is he at Six Flags?
No, he's not at Six Flags. And guess what else goes?
What?
I don't really see like expensive bling bling on him. All of his pictures are him, his team, his sponsors. He's got a white t-shirt, a gray t-shirt. I don't see like expensive cars, jewelry, like, and what I'm getting at is distractions. Mm-hmm. It's only like the maybe 15th post down, and that's him wearing the traditional Muslim gear or attire or whatever you want to call it. So, well, heck, even them, he actually is with two guys that are doing it, not even him, but for the most part, training. In one little thing here, he's playing basketball. It's funny because I think they call it Dagestani basketball. Been trying to figure out what the hell it is. I don't even see Hasbulla in here yet. I don't know. I just see again someone that isn't as distracted. Yeah, but anyway. For Oliveira, that huge entourage, the walking the lion, and I like it when the fighters do look slick. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think every day has to be a fashion statement. And that's what I'm hearing is they hire these people that will help you pretty much dress you every day. Every time you walk out of your hotel room, it is some sort of a statement. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I think every single time you're doing that, you may be even just taking time away from resting. Maybe you can sneak in a 2-hour nap instead of going and picking out outfits.
Yeah. Volkanovski reminds me a little bit of that as well. Yeah. He's just kind of a jeans and t-shirt guy. He just, you know, you get an honest camp out of that guy every single time. It's just that champ mentality. You know, we were talking about this on the last show, I think, about GSP. That's the mentality you have to have.
Exactly. Anyway, congrats to Islam Makhachev. I still think Oliveira had one hell of a resurgence. He didn't get completely knocked out. He didn't get completely removed from consciousness from the submission or anything. I think he can live to fight another day, and who knows, maybe he'll be right back there. Immediately, here's the other thing. When they interviewed him, he said, no, that wasn't me. And then he goes, Dana, Hunter, I've done some favors for the company. I want to run it back in Brazil. And I was just thinking on. Without sounding too disrespectful, in my mind I was going, fool, that train fucking left. These guys are already making plans for Perth, Australia. It's what the UFC does. The matchmakers, Hunter Campbell, Dana White. If it's convenient for them, sure. But because they owe you one, no. They may owe you one, and that may coincide with you know, it works out for them as well, and they can pay off a favor. But they just seem laser focused now on Alexander Volkanovski versus Islam Makhachev. So him thinking he might get something in Brazil, no, he's going to have to fight somebody. He's not going to get an immediate rematch.
Unless we're talking about something else, I thought he asked for another fight, a fight right away. I know he promised when he was doing the interview, he said he promised he would be champ again, but I thought he just said, I just want to fight again.
Oh,
give me a fight.
You don't have to ask for that favor. Yeah, they can grant that one. I thought he was asking for, like, let's run it back.
Well, he might have said that in another interview or something, but I thought in the cage, I thought he just said, I just want to fight. Like, I just want to get back in here and do this. Because you're right. I don't care what kind of favor you did. You're just not getting that wish. Yeah. You know, they brought Volkanovski into the cage, a fight that makes no sense to me, but whatever. You can tell what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, from Islam Makhachev's point of view, you know, he'll get his pay-per-view cuts now against Volkanovski, who's, you know, slowly becoming a more popular fighter. Could he get more pay-per-view points against Poirier or McGregor, of course? Yes, but as we found out from McGregor, or through Dana, courtesy of our Fada Hanoun asking and confirming, he still has to jump in the pool for 6 months before he can take a fight. That means that if Conor McGregor tonight decided, you saw it, I'm back in, well, count 6 months from today. So what's that, April 23rd, before he could fight again?
He says Islam and Volkanovski will sell 2 pay-per-view buys or something like that, right? He was kind of vocal on Twitter this weekend.
I do get a kick out of him. I don't always like him raining on parades, but once he does and I read it, he makes me chuckle. They all make me chuckle, man. All of them do, honestly. Ali, Connor, Jones. I just wish they wouldn't do it and allow the fighters to have their moment, especially when they're actually trying to say it, like, nice fight, boys. Then leave it at that. At least give it 24 hours and then go, all right, moving on. I'm the man, huh, everybody, you know, and then start with that and start laying out, you know, ways in which you can get in there or whatever. But to just come in and do it like that same night, it's like you're just that guy that
Swagger Jacker
takes over the wedding and gets drunk and ruins it for everyone, you know. And here's the thing, and most of them are trying to actually say that that's not what they're doing, but that in fact is what they're doing. So, anyway, go ahead.
Swagger Jacking is basically what they're trying to do. The thing about Connor, so I like it when he speaks up. I laugh most of the time, but two things that he does that I don't like. One is, man, quit going after people's family. Like, just leave them out of it. Mm-hmm. And then two, I don't know if he's typing all this shit out as fast as he can to get it out as fast as he can, or if he just doesn't give a fuck. But sometimes it's really hard to understand what the hell he's trying to say. I think if he just stopped and went back and read it and went, oh, I didn't mean to put that, I meant this, or a comma here and there or something, you know? But at the same time, if his whole point is I need to get this out quick because that's what I need to do is Swagger Jack, then okay. But
yeah, he doesn't
take a second to read it.
He doesn't care about commas or anything. As long as he looks at it and it makes sense to him.
But it doesn't make sense. That's the thing, is like half of it doesn't make sense to me.
He's probably talking in street slang. So I have knucklehead friends as well. We talk in slang. And so that's the way they talk. But I'm so used to talking proper because of our editorial team. They've checked me so many times that usually when you get something from me, it has pretty decent grammar, right? But from them, I get some of the movies that we quote, the slang that we grew up with, things like that. And so now think about Conor McGregor, who gives zero Fs what do people think. He's just typing fast and getting it out there. Probably drunk, probably partying, you know. But it does look like it's his. And he's saying he thinks he's got the formula for Makhachev and the style of fight that the Dagestani fighters have. And I just don't see it. Versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, he did stifle Khabib from getting going, at least in the first round. He did win round three against Khabib, but he also got knocked down by Khabib. He never knocked down Khabib. And then when Khabib looked like, okay, I think I'm going to really turn it on, he did. He submitted him pretty quick. So, you know, I didn't see anything in that fight. And then the other guys that have just kind of beaten him since or beaten him before, you know, against Nate. So, you know, he was – when he didn't think the striking was going his way and he got hurt, he dove in at Nate's legs. When a striker dives in at another striker's legs, you're basically saying, I'm not getting the best of the striking or I'm hurt. I need to get you on the ground. You're telling us something. That's what he was doing there. And then with Poirier, Poirier was just turning it on. I'll give him credit for winning round one of the second fight if I have it right. And but, you know, and the fight started to turn. And you know, he wasn't able to win. And then the last fight, even before he got his leg checked and broken, Poirier was in control of that fight as well. So now Poirier doesn't have the Dagestani type of mentality or game planning or skill set or whatever. So I don't know why I went down that road. What I'm saying is McGregor just hasn't shown me much for problem solving. Even when he lost to Poirier in the second fight, I remember him kind of almost implying, man, if between boxing and me growing into a global superstar, where did these calf kicks come from? When in reality, calf kicks have probably been here for a full decade, and they've really, really mattered in the last 5-6 years. So for him to not know that kind of caught me off guard.
I think he used the wrong wording. It's not that he has the style. He's just – and it's not that he's going to throw a Hail Mary either. He's just a heavy hitter. He is. But really – if you look at a guy like Islam Makhachev, it's not that we're pointing at any deficiencies on him where somebody's going to take advantage of him. That's not the case. You just have to be better than him that night. You're not going to out-cardio him. Maybe you can out-strike him. You're not going to out-wrestle him. You're probably, if Charles Oliveira is not going to have better ground game than him that night, who the fuck is? You know what I mean? So, like, really, you just have to be a better fighter and hope you land a good punch on the guy. But
yeah, and that's what Conor can do. Definitely. Yeah. I'll never argue Conor with that. He's shown us he's got power. He's pretty precise. He rises to the occasion in big game fights. I'll definitely give him that. But it's been a while since he's done that. The only time he kind of did was against Donald Cerrone. But at the same time, Donald Cerrone was in a part of his career where others were doing the same type of thing, pretty much just getting by Donald Cerrone and making it look easy. So as Donald Cerrone fought other opposition, it made Conor's win look less impressive, you know. But getting back to Conor versus Makhachev, he just can't jump that queue. It's going to be looks like Volkanovski challenging Makhachev for Makhachev's lightweight title. Volkanovski's going to attempt to be a champ. Makhachev is going to try and defend his title, you know, and that's pretty much that. Now, if I'm Benil Dariush, what I am doing is getting on that card. Yeah. And what I do like about Benil Dariush's mode of thinking, you know, he said, I'm not a beggar. You don't have to beg necessarily. I think you just have to plead your case and appeal to fans. The way you do that is pretty much how he doesn't want to do it. And that's being fake and doing a promo and everything, right? But I don't think you just completely throw in the towel and go, nope, I'm not doing it. You know, what you can do is lay out the facts. Hey, I've won 8 in a row. I don't know what else the UFC wants me to do. I fought everyone they've told me, including people ahead of me, people behind me. So in the meantime, I'll just keep smashing people. But why not say, at least put me on the same card as this guy? That way, in case he can't go, I'll be there ready to step in. Because if Volkanovski can't go, Dariush should be next.
Yeah. I think what he needs to do is get in the same room as Dana White and ask him in front of reporters a simple question. And that's, what is it I have to do? What have I done wrong so far? There's no answer to that. I don't think Dana White can really... And Dana White, I think when he's backed into a corner like that, I think he might go, all right, kid, you're next or something.
Maybe.
Right? Yeah. Give him something.
Dana used to say that Tyron Woodley would text him day and night, and he bugged him so much that I think he probably caved in on an occasion or two. But what he has to make sure of goes is if he does fight in Perth versus someone else, you know, I don't know who's there, man. There's Fiziev, there's Gaethje, but he's friends with Gaethje. What he needs to be careful of is Michael Chandler stealing some thunder. Michael Chandler's going to fight Dustin Poirier, and Michael Chandler gives great promos, has a lot of fans, puts on great fights, and somehow Michael Chandler might be able to, if he beats Poirier, get ahead of Beneil Dariush. That's what Beneil needs to prevent. So that's why it kind of helps to at least stake your claim a little bit. But
yeah, that poor Benny, man. He's fighting off a lot of things, dude. Just the fact that Volkanovski's going up and taking that spot to me is just a damn shame. But you know, he's got to fight off Michael Chandler. He had even the possibility of a rematch, right? If that would have been like a barn burner or something, you never know. They could have said, "Hey, man, all right, you're next. That we could do this rematch." There's so many things. Conor McGregor can pop out of the woodworks whenever he wants after this USADA thing, and somehow they'll figure out a way where that makes sense. Like, there are a lot of things in Beneil Dariush's way right now.
You still got to watch out for Oliveira again, because Oliveira is obviously fun.
Mm-hmm. Makhachev could get hurt. He could get hurt and delay things. Like, there's a lot, dude.
Yeah. He hadn't fought in over a year. We'll go straight to him, and then we'll come back and do the bantamweights. We might as well stay with the lightweights. I really enjoyed Gamrot versus Dariush. I mean, they made it fun. This is what I said at the watch-along was, even on the ground, whether it was hip tosses, takedowns, scrambles, sweeps, it was really fast, explosive, strategic. It was like high-speed human chess. And then when they would stand, that was a lot of fun. But that's how you can make the ground game be just as exciting as the stand-up. Yeah, those two did a great job because they were both in great condition and they were both very, very focused. But Beneil at the end just dug a little bit deeper, man. He would not give in to those takedowns. And he was coming out with many ways to defend them. Sometimes he would kind of roll into leg locks. Other times he would sprawl, you know. He would basically sometimes, if he did get put up against the cage, turn into him, maybe grab some wrist control. Overhook, underhook, like it was really, really beautiful to see him throw all of his tools out of his toolbox and keep Gamrot guessing. So that was really cool. A credit to him there, and a credit to Gamrot. He showed us the same way O'Malley showed us. Hey, I'm a little bit further down at the rankings, but I can bang with the best, you know. So I'm already excited about Gamrot's next fight as well.
Credit to his corner as well. Rafael Cordero, just, man, he gets me fired up when I'm hearing him shout at his fighters and really just dig into that one thing that you need for a fighter to bring out the best in them. It was a good performance for Benny. I don't want to say it was great, but it was a really solid performance, and that's what that guy's been giving off. And that's the thing, is like, I'm more interested to see that fight. You know, if you match him up with Islam, it's like, all right, let's say Islam takes him down. Benny's jiu-jitsu is pretty legit. That ain't bad. Benny's great on his feet. So wherever that fight goes, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a good fight. But that's just the problem. You know, you're looking at him. He's not the type of guy that the UFC likes to promote. You look at Bilal Muhammad. He's just not the type of guy that the UFC really promotes. That's the problem. But they're winning all their fights.
Another guy with an 8-fight win streak, Bilal Muhammad, yeah. I think if one thing some fighters should learn is, I don't care how good your ground game off your back is, it's probably not better than Charles Oliveira's. And he really wasn't coming close to anything from the bottom. Open up your guard. Work to get up. Do not stay under a Dagestani fighter, because they will start to smash. And once the damage seeps in, your cardio goes down. You become a damaged fighter with less energy. You probably start to break and doubt yourself or whatever. So when you get taken down, immediately try and get back up. And when you have an opening, go for that opening. Anytime there's a little bit of hesitation and you see them pull your legs back, that costs you about another 90 seconds of torture. You know what I mean? So when you're ready to spring up, do not go in steps. And if you're going in steps, it's because you haven't trained it enough and not done as many reps. To me, that's what it looked like, was Benil Dariush gets a lot of reps in for a lot of the techniques that he has. And that's why he was able to do one to the next, one to the next. He was really, really flowing. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah, I love that about him.
Yeah. So, all right, there you have it. Makhachev probably next versus Volkanovski. As far as Oliveira, he says he wants to fight soon. I suppose since Poirier and Chandler already booked, and he's already fought Poirier, Chandler, and Gaethje, then I suppose maybe Fiziev. I don't know who else might be next for Oliveira. Maybe Connor. I don't know. That might be fun. I mean, Connor's always talking about going to Brazil, but see, again, going back to the thing with Connor, even if Connor jumps in the USADA thing today, he can't fight for 6 months. It sounded like Oliveira, you're right, goes, maybe was even angling for that card in Rio de Janeiro. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Moving back to the bantamweight. So this is the co-main event and the featured bout. Aljamain Sterling defeated TJ Dillashaw. So he defended his UFC bantamweight title. And Sean O'Malley. I almost said Peter O'Malley, the former Dodgers owner. Sean O'Malley defeated Piotr Jan. And by decision, split decision. Very, very controversial. Sterling won by TKO. And what are your thoughts on the title fight first?
Well, not too much of it played out. You know, with the injury happening so early in that fight, we were just sitting there trying to witness a little bit of a gut check. And then after a while, we were sitting there trying to figure out, well, when are they going to stop this? Because obviously one guy is just not going to, you know, they put his shoulder back in at the end of round one. And then coming back in, it just happened so quickly again that you just wanted it to be over. You know, you just didn't. I don't know. I actually thought it went on a little bit too long, but we didn't really get to see much of a fight play out. That's not Aljamain Sterling's problem. It's not his fault.
Yeah, and then TJ opens up and shares that he injured his shoulder in April. And since April, his shoulder is dislocated 20 times, at least 20 times in practice. So I was mixed in emotions with that. I was thinking, well, why'd you take the fight, stupid? Like, I don't think that you didn't think that what happened Saturday could happen. You know, this thing's popped out 20 times. However, in defense of TJ, when we were all talking about it, I did tell Goz, maybe he went through a few patches of 2 weeks, hard training, it never popped out, and he thought, okay, you know, I've been good for stretches. It's not like it's popping out every hour, you know, like 1:05 p.m., put it back in, 2:05 p.m., put it back in, 3:05 p.m. It's not like it's that bad either. So that's all I can think of is maybe he thought he can get through it. You know what I mean? But as soon as it happened, goes, I was thinking, oh, man, bummer. Damn. Because I was thinking of the Pico fight, right? And then I see that he's getting close to surviving. And then there's the countdown. 10, 9, 8. Boom, he makes it to the end. Then I remember we all said, okay, let's hope he's not getting jerked around his arm, you know, like Brandon Gibson was to Aaron Pico. Hopefully they learned a little bit how to do it. And sure enough, they're kind of rubbing it, massaging it. And then it looked like there was this click, boom, he goes in, he says it's in. And I felt like I heard Daniel LaRusso's going to fight. Daniel LaRusso's going to fight. You know, so I was really, really pumped for that second round, thinking, hey, there's still time here, you know. I was also thinking in my head, did Aljo get a 10-8? Is it only a 10-9? Can TJ Dillashaw come back? What's going to happen? And as that's happening, boom, the shoulder goes out again. Que la chingada. You know, I remember going, fuck. So right away, it went from, you know, a garbage first round, like huge anticipation, then a garbage first round, then the Daniel LaRusso's going to fight moment. And then all of a sudden back to it being a garbage fight that just needed to be stopped. Then TJ Dillashaw is when he told us, you know, the injury, when it happened, sorry for holding up the division. And I was just mixed in my emotions, trying to think it through. On the one hand, maybe he's thinking, I've gone through some sparring sessions and this hasn't happened. If I can win a title, I'll get the shoulder fixed afterwards. On the other hand, I'm thinking, you just fucked up some of my parlays. Why'd you take the fight? Like, I was really, really a confused MF-er, trying to figure out how to feel about it all, what he could have done. Here's what I know. When he was suspended for 2 years, he said, I'm going to get my two shoulders fixed. They've been messed up for years, and this will give me a chance to do it. First, he did one, then he did the other. He posted on social media, himself in slings. And if you know TJ Dillashaw, the guy probably didn't miss any physical therapy, and I thought he's come back 100, right? Then he hurts his knee in the Sanhagen fight. All right. Okay, well, maybe that's just him getting older, or who knows what. Now this, dude, it's like, oh, bro, boy, I don't know. I don't know how to feel. But, yeah, I think none of that's Sterling's fault.
Well, I felt pretty pissed. Even if he came out in round two with the shoulder back in, we can't pretend like he didn't get the shit beat out of him for a whole round. Like, he's not coming in 100% in round two. So I didn't feel like we were going to get like a fair fight afterwards. I don't know. It was just all a mess, but all I can think of is like, why did he say it? Why?
I know. That was the other thing. Just keep that to yourself. You know, he told Mark Goddard, hey, if it pops out, don't worry. This has happened before. We'll pop it back in. I doubt the UFC knew. Maybe they did. I don't know. Somehow he snuck it by the commission. But, you know, what's the test? What's the test that they do when they give you your physical or your medical or whatever it's called? I doubt they're really saying, hey, throw 100 miles an hour, you know, or throw this football. I don't think they're really checking every limb of your body to see that it's firing at 100. So I don't know that there's anything anyone could have done other than TJ if it was after maybe like the third time it popped out when it originally happened in April, if he just would have said, I can't have this happen in a title fight. I got to get this addressed. And hopefully when I get back, get a title fight. But see, this is where I can go off in tangents. Some people are going, he did it for money, stupid, right? And then I'm thinking, okay, so then are you telling me that someone that's been a champion a few times, has had his fair share of cut pay-per-view cuts, still can blast through a few million and needs this check? Oh, well, back to fighter pay. Let's talk about fighter pay again. You know, like maybe it's not like the like how Dana likes to say, oh, he's a champ, he's set for life. You know, maybe these guys aren't set for life because when you make a lot, you also spend a lot. And so therefore you needed that check. You know, when Kevin Durant got signed by the Brooklyn Nets, they signed him having just either torn his Achilles or his ACL. I think it was the Achilles.
Achilles.
But and so for they knew that the 4-year deal, the 6-year deal, whatever the deal was, that they knew that for 1 year they were gonna pay him to just rehab. He wasn't even gonna play that year. Right? But they believed so much in his talent, they made him comfortable enough to know, just get healthy, kid. We're planning on the year after with you. So with TJ, did he not feel that level of comfort of, if I go do this and I come back, will I have been passed up? You know, do I really need this paycheck now? I don't know. That's something we would have to do, you know, TJ in studio, talk about for a few hours and just kind of cover all the corners. This is me just trying to speculate, right? Why didn't you just get the surgery, I guess, or try and get stem cells? I don't know. Whatever it takes to maybe do it, or maybe he just knew it ain't going to get better. A lot of people were saying from what they heard from him post-fight, that it sounds like he may even be done. And maybe this was the final check. You know what I mean? And that was that. So if it was, then I guess. But what a terrible way to go out.
Well, I think yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. He did it for the money. But my issue, I can understand that. My issue is, why tell everyone about it? You can do everything you just did and not tell everyone about it. And guess what we're going to talk about? Man, TJ Dillashaw really gut. That was a real gut performance, right? He tried his hardest. He fought a whole round with his shoulder dislocated. Got it popped back in. Came back, tried, but it just didn't work out. All he had to do is keep his mouth shut. So now what happens, right? We all go, oh, all that money we paid. man, we feel ripped off. This guy knew the whole time. What a scumbag. I can't believe the commission let him do that. I can't believe the UFC doesn't have better tests for that type of stuff. Imagine, you know, just what, a week ago, they're saying, all right, fighters, you can't bet on yourself, or you can't bet at all, whether it's another fight or whatever, or even on yourself. Boy, that's kind of convenient now, right? When you think about it, like, that couldn't have come at a dumber time. That almost makes you think like they knew that he had this problem or something. But now think about your parlay. That's your hard-earned money that you put in on a fighter thinking he was 100%. And now look, like, how much more pissed off are you because he said those words?
I wish you would have waited. Like DC, didn't DC wait about 5 years to finally go, hey, as they're putting that Hall of Fame jacket, I got something to tell you all. All right, I grabbed the towel in Buffalo. Five years later, we're all laughing. The career's over, you know? That's that. But you're right, Goz. I don't think I needed to hear that night. You know what I mean? Like, I was actually, like you said, going, fuck, man, that's a tough hombre. You know, a lot of people would have quit right away. Instead, he fought valiantly and blah, blah, blah. And now I don't know what to feel, because I like to think it through and cover all the bases, listen to other experts and see, you know, but that night I felt empty and robbed a little bit.
Yeah. And guess what? TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling just defended his belt. But what are we talking about? TJ Dillashaw, right? He didn't even really get a chance. Like, I mean, that was a great performance, but he did it against a one-arm guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's just unfortunate for him again.
Yeah, because his last three fights are win by disqualification. Okay, then you beat Peter Yan after holding up the... So if I wanted to be a hater, I would tell Sterling, oh, bitch, you won by disqualification. You were getting your ass kicked. Then you held up the whole division for a year because you backed out of a fight because your neck hurt. And then when you came back, okay, you got him, you caught him off guard, but you know the way that fight was progressing. If it was to the death, he would have got you. And then in this one, you beat a guy with one arm. I could beat a guy with one arm. So that's me, obviously, in hater mode, right? But that's not how I feel. Sterling did what is in front of him. I think probably everything he did, I probably would have done. Imagine if I had won the title the way I won it. I still have the belt. I'm still technically the champion. Am I never supposed to wear it? Am I never supposed to take a picture? Maybe some are saying, did you have to do it that night? But if I come home from the hospital and all of you are like, hey, trying to cheer me up, and you want to take a pic, or mom and dad or Jules or something like that, and big deal, man. I thought he was treated so unfair. And yeah, it took a year, but he was 100. And when he was 100, he beat Peter Yan fair and square. You got to tip your hat to that. And then as far as this fight goes, hey, he showed up, you know, like, and it wasn't, he didn't, you know, now he's trying to say though on social media that he may have contributed to it, maybe, but I don't know. I have no problems with Aljamain Sterling. He's got a division that he needs to worry about, so I hope he doesn't even think about Volkanovski or anything like that. These fighters start thinking about that a little too early, in my opinion, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now the hard part, most of the hard part's already done, though. Really, when you think about the guys he's faced in TJ and Yan, TJ and Yan, like, that's as tough as it gets. After that, yeah, there's good fighters, and yeah, they're tough challenges, but I would favor Aljamain Sterling in a lot of those fights.
And who are those guys? Marlon Vera, Sean O'Malley, Corey Sandhagen, who he already beat on his road to the title.
Mm-hmm.
But he's looked better since then. So I would say those are the three that stand up. Marlon Vera has every right to go, hold on a second, I beat O'Malley. Why'd you even bring up O'Malley? And Corey Sandhagen has every right to say, well, I've been banging with the top five for the last couple of years. You guys have really yet to do that, except for Sean O'Malley, who just did it and won by split. Chito Vera caught Dominic Cruz towards the tail end, but respect, he won that. But if I'm Corey Sandhagen, you know, I'm obviously trying to posture that way. But Corey Sandhagen, he's another guy that doesn't like to go down that road. He just, like, wherever the chips fall, he just goes for it. But yeah. Sean O'Malley, keeping it real, how's it not going to be him? As popular as he is, you know, the way this was, like you said, planned out a little bit by the matchmakers, Dana saying that if he can beat Peter Yan, you know, he's going to have an astronomical type of popularity. And then, of course, from Sterling's end, he probably wants pay-per-view cuts. So why wouldn't he lean into O'Malley, right?
Dude, that's the fight. I'm sorry. There will not be another fight for Sean O'Malley. I know he said that bullshit about he's got to go back and watch the fight and all that. And yeah, I believe that he believes that in his head. But there ain't any chance that the UFC is going to give him any other fight other than that fight. They want him to fight for the title. They probably want him to do it in Vegas or something. But they probably want him to be attached to a bigger name, too, on a card. But that's going to happen. And I guess we might as well talk about that fight, right? The Yan fight? Because it really shouldn't be O'Malley in that fight.
I thought Yan.
That's my opinion. That's my opinion. I've now watched the fight 2 times. The first time I thought, for sure, Yan. Watching it the second time, maybe a little closer than I thought, but still felt very comfortable saying Yan won that fight.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. They're not obviously going to do anything about that. O'Malley won. The judges awarded him the decision. I understand Yan's team being pissed off. I really do. Yan, had he won, wasn't going to fight Aljo again, in my opinion. I just don't think how they would match those guys up right away. So either way, Yan was going to have to beat a few other people. So I don't think Yan should get too caught up in this. That's not to say that they're going to treat it as a win, but they're definitely not going to treat it as a loss that just makes them tumble down the standings or anything like that, the rankings. So what Yan needs to do is just focus on whoever's next fight's going to be, which I think probably makes sense as Chito Vera, and have O'Malley fight Aljamain Sterling, and do it on the same card. I always say, do it on the same card. Be ready to pounce in case they're not ready to go, just like Beneil was there. Because if Volkanovski wouldn't have flown across the world, Beneil was ready to step in case one of the other two couldn't go. So yeah. I love that security as a fan. They said that a lot of Americans went to Abu Dhabi. I would love to go to Abu Dhabi and know that my main event is safe because there's someone else from that card also there. It's also fun when they go, hey, Beneil, Oliveira was just here, you know, or Islam was just here. React to what he just said and back and forth. And it just keeps everything so fresh, you know, like because of what's happening. Like there's this huge spotlight on the division. So I just think that's always got to be the way.
This division is nuts. But the way it's unfolding in a way that I feel is advantageous for Aljamain Sterling. I think he has the potential to reign, maybe not for a really long time, but at least a couple more fights. He definitely has that in him.
Yeah, because his kryptonite is Peter Yan.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else, I think he has the ability to kind of take off their feet pretty easily. Vera, O'Malley, Sanhagen, which he already did. And even though Piotr Yan is not some noted wrestler, the dude's got some wrestling takedown defense. So he's gotten past his kryptonite. Now, he's going to have to face his kryptonite one more time, especially if Peter Yan wins the next couple fights. Like I said, I don't think they're going to hold this one against him too much. But I see Aljamain Sterling versus Sean O'Malley probably in either March or April here in Las Vegas. I don't think they'll headline. I have to see how big O'Malley's really, really gotten. But I see the Vegas show being headlined by Ngannou and Jones, and I could see these guys being like a co-main event. That would be a really, really super right. card.
I think that's what would probably happen.
Yeah. And then again, Vera versus Piotr Yan. Maybe that can headline a fight night somewhere around that time or the same show. I don't know. But there you have it. How about Bilal Muhammad against Sean Brady? Bilal Muhammad gave Sean Brady his first loss after 15 fights. So he's now 15-1, so maybe 16 fights. Early on, it wasn't going good for him. Brady had heavy hands, fast hands. He looked good. Nice technique, nice boxing. He can wrestle too, right? And Bilal was taking a lot of them. Every once in a while, he'd punch back, but he was patient, looking for his openings. But I thought, ooh, do not do what you did in round one, or this guy's going to get round two, and your back's going to be to the wall. And Bilal's just not really much of a finisher. Mm-hmm. But instead, Bilal started turning it up in round two, which means he learned from previous fights. He's evolved. He's listening to his coaches. And he started fighting in, you know, punches in bunches. And then all of a sudden, Sean Brady lost a little bit of his steam. He was just getting hit too much. And Bilal Muhammad gets the finish. Big, big win for Bilal Muhammad. Tremendous. On such a huge stage, fighting against someone who's behind him in the rankings, which do most fighters do that after fighting, you know, Vicente Luque? No, not really. You know what I mean? So to fight back in this, against someone that's pretty dangerous, hopefully this nets him something. But where is he? You got Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman, probably in either March or April. One of those shoes is going to be in England. The other one's going to be in Vegas. So after that, is Bilal the winner versus the winner of that? I don't know, because Hamzat Chimaev is pretty popular.
Yeah, so, that's going to dictate a lot.
But are they going to make Hamzat Chimaev go up to middleweight? That's the question. Remember, he fucked up, right? Because he beat Gilbert Burns. Okay, you got next, kid. You proved it. But then he screws up against Nate. Nah, he's got to go to middleweight. You know, the matchmakers are arguing over. Dana doesn't know what to do. So, I don't know. Hamzat, I don't know what's going to happen with Hamzat. He probably didn't help himself by starting a scuffle over there. That's never a good look, you know. But even though he's him and his adversary, this time Abubakar Nurmagomedov, they're all good. They made peace. Still don't think the UFC likes to have those types of problems on their shows. You know, they like some thuggery, but not consistently, and not consistently for one guy.
Yeah, dude, I don't know, man. Bilal Muhammad, I thought his goose was cooked early on in that fight, but he proved a lot. He showed a lot of composure. I mean, that's a tough fight. He got that win. Is he title worthy? I mean, his record shows it, right? If you look at the skins on his wall, they're pretty decent. They're good names. Colby Covington and Hamzat Chimaev, though, I feel like is the fight that's going to be made. And that's just going to really put him in a really, really tough spot. You know, because we all know Usman is next. And that's got to play out. And then you would imagine if Hamzat wins, or actually, really, it would depend. You know, if Leon Edwards is still champ, then that opens the door for Colby Covington again. Right? So a lot can really, really happen. But I don't think any of it's going to be beneficial for Bilal Muhammad right now.
Yeah. Well, think about the tunnel system on this one. You got Edwards versus Usman. If Edwards wins, he probably has to fight the winner of Chimaev and Covington. If they give Chimaev another chance to fight at 170, and if they match him up against Covington, so that's a tough matchup. But let's say he gets past him, then it's Edwards versus Chimaev. I find it hard to be that it won't be that. If Covington wins over Chimaev, it may be Covington versus Edwards. This is just if Edwards win. I'm going to attack Edwards first. But there's a wild card here. I know Jorge Masvidal's lost three in a row, but supposedly he sells the second most amount of pay-per-views. What if Edwards wants to push for that? Three-piece in a soda. I got to get mine's back, you know. And if it's lucrative for the UFC, would they pursue it? I don't know. I think that's a little bit more of a long shot. I think Jorge probably needs a win, and then maybe he can slip in there. And then, of course, if Usman wins and Covington wins, I don't think Covington gets a third shot just yet.
No.
And then Masvidal, he's had his two shots against Usman. So it'd probably be better if Hamzat and Usman won, because then that fight would then make sense, right? But did you notice none of it really involves Bilal Muhammad? That's the problem. Muhammad's best thing is to probably just put on his Beneil Dariush blinders and just say, just give me who's next. But make sure I'm on that card. I want to be insurance on that card. And just give me someone else who's next, because I just don't see him as next or even the guy after that.
I have an avenue for him.
What's that?
Covington and Hamzat get signed. All right. However, Hamzat misses weight. They still do the fight. Hamzat wins, but you can't give Hamzat a title shot after not making weight two times. So now what are you going to do? Now you give it to Bilal Muhammad. That's the only way I think it can happen.
Or Covington and Usman win, and Dana doesn't want to do part three, and Bilal's sitting there without an opponent. Because if Covington's gotten rid of Shamayev, then, you know, and now three-piece in Minnesota doesn't come into play because that's with Edwards, not Usman. So if Usman wins, yeah, there might be a route there with Bilal Muhammad. Here's another thing. If you really want to have fun, what if Pajeda beats Izzy? Then Usman would want to explore moving up. But I think that's more of when he was kind of clearing out the vision and kind of getting up, kind of getting bored. Now that he's no longer champ, he'd probably have to fight Edwards and probably defend again before he could go, now I want greatness and I want to move on, because he felt like Izzy is a fellow Nigerian. I don't want to do that. Whereas Alex Pajeda, that might be different. Now, that said, I'm sure if Izzy lost, he'd probably want to run it back pretty quick, and he'd probably get that privilege because he's defended five times. Izzy says six because he counts the interim, right? Which brings me to Paulo Costa and Robert Whittaker. That was announced over the weekend. What does the winner really get? Both guys have lost to Izzy. Whittaker's lost twice to him. It's a hell of a fight. I can't wait for it, but does the winner really get a shot? I don't know. They really need Pajeda to win those two.
Yeah, that's kind of a shit show, man, when you really look at it. But the fight itself is going to be a lot of fun. I don't know what to think with Paulo Costa, dude. Like, he just looked so great in that last fight. But not that long ago, we saw him have issues in fights. So, like, I really don't know what to think. But Robert Whittaker's just kind of shown that everybody else, he's got him. It's just the champ that he can't really find an avenue for success against him. But I don't know. Costa's tough. I think this will be a fun fight.
It is kind of nice, though, to jump around and look at all the different possibilities that is out there. Even though it's confusing to go down these rabbit holes, you know, it's fun. And I don't think nothing we said or anything we said was unrealistic. All of it could happen. I think Goz was pushing the envelope a little bit with, well, what if Covington wins, but Shamayev misses weight again? That's a real catastrophe. But I guess once you miss
one. No. It's what if Shamayev misses weight, they still do the fight, and he wins. If he wins, you can't give him a title shot missing weight the last two times. Right. Not to mention, he's got to make championship weight. So that's the only way where I think Bilal could slip in there.
Yeah. I'm happy for Bilal, though, man. To get the finish, fighting someone behind him, kind of hooked up with the new team. And guess what? He didn't do it without sabotaging his old team. You know, his real good friend and coach Lewis Taylor was there with him, and Habib was in his corner, and so I thought it was awesome. Like, it looked like he did it all right, at least from what I can tell.
Yeah,
maybe his other teammates or coaches feel different, I don't know, but it can't be easy when someone leaves the gym. Maybe it was just for the camp, I don't know, but when they leave and they have success, you have to wonder. If I had a gym goes and one of my fighters left to go to another gym and he looked better than ever, I'd have to think, like, man, you know, do I have to tighten my ship up a little bit here? Like, what's going on? Why weren't we able to get finishes when he was here? And all of a sudden he goes out and gets a finish. I'd be second guessing myself, but that's why I'm not in that game. Here's the rest of the card, and then we'll jump around and pick a few more fights before we get on out of here. Well, first, let me get this out of the way. One on Prime Video 3 had a fight card. So that's one championship. Obviously, you know they're on Prime Video. And their main event of John Lineker versus Fabricio de Andrade was just a mess from the beginning. So this was for Lineker's bantamweight title, except over there, they don't have to make 135. They just have to be hydrated 145. He didn't even do that. He couldn't do that. So he got stripped before the fight even happened. Then once the fight happened, it ended in a no contest, an accidental groin strike. And I think he's also got an orbital bone or an eye injury of some sort. So him flying back to Brazil is a mess because he goes home with no title. There is a no contest. Okay. But, you know, the eye injury, he lost 20% of his purse. Like, what a joke of a trip for that guy.
Yeah, that's a mess, dude. I wouldn't even know where to begin with that. But I mean, what do you do with one championship like that? That was a big signing. If you can't trust that guy to make weight, like that's a huge part of all this, man. And on top of that, he's given all these avenues to make it so much easier, and he still can't do it.
Yeah, because folks, he used to train, he used to compete as a flyweight in the UFC. That means you need to make 125. Couldn't do it. He did it a few times, but most of the time he couldn't do it. So he moved up to 35. But guess what? He was winning some fights at 135. Shit. Okay. Well, maybe this is his spot. He's heavy-handed. He does well. But he had some problems there too. So then he went to one championship. So he couldn't make 25. He had problems with 35. And now he couldn't make 45? Like, seriously, at some point, you really have to take a look in the mirror and go, what is this? Like, who am I? You know what I mean? Manon Fiorot defeated Kaitlyn Chookagian. This was the first fight of the pay-per-view. These are flyweights. Fiorot got the decision win. It was unanimous. So she's kind of in the same spot, I think, as Alexa Grasso, both undefeated in the UFC at the flyweight division. And I know some people will go, well, match them two up because Valentina's got Talia Santos. Yeah, we don't like to pick off contenders, though. So I would say if she's not going to fight Santos in the rematch, especially with that Brazil card coming up. And speaking of orbital bones, she heard hers, Santos did. However, when she consulted a few more doctors, this is from me reading some stories over the weekend, they said she didn't need to do it. So she bypassed getting that surgery. So I, from what I heard, she's training again. I think that fight could be made for them to fight in Brazil. And Valentina's a road warrior. I could see her going to Brazil and doing it. But we still haven't heard that, so that's just me speculating. But if they are going to run back Santos and Valentina, then that leaves Fiorot and Grasso out there to maybe match up, or maybe you want to match those two up against two other flyweights and just see who kind of comes out of it and who looks best. I'm open to that as well. Question is, you know, who would you match them up against? Well, there's Casey O'Neill, but Casey O'Neill, I thought I heard she had torn her ACL. And, but I, you know, if you follow her on social media, I don't think I've seen anything about a surgery or rehab or anything like that. So maybe it wasn't a full tear, who knows, but she is undefeated. She's a name. And then of course, Lauren Murphy is fighting Jessica Andrade in January in Brazil. And even though both have lost to Valentina, I think the winner could serve for one and O'Neill could serve for the other if you want to keep them separate, meaning Fiorot and Grasso.
I think they're going to keep them separate. That's the thing is, like, I don't know if either one wants Valentina. They're certainly not talking like they do. So I think they'll keep them separate because you want to have challenges for her.
And right behind them, you also have Cortez and Molly, Meatball Molly. And both of them have fights lined up. Meatball Molly has Aaron Blanchfield in New York, UFC 281. And Tracy Cortez has Amanda Ribas. And that one is December 3rd. So options. Good stuff. I like it. The rest of the card went as follows. On the featured prelims, starting the night off, Carol Rosa defeated Lena Landsberg. Those are bantamweights. Muhammad Mokaev defeated Malcolm Gordon, flyweights. Armin Petrosian defeated AJ Dobson, middleweights. Abubakar Nurmagomedov defeated Gadzi Omar Gadziev, welterweights. Nikita Krylov defeated Volkan Ozdemir, light heavyweights. Kyle Borrajo defeated Mahmoud Muradov, middleweights. So that, along with the Bilal Muhammad and Sean Brady fight, was your prelims. And they made it pretty enjoyable. A few of those fights were some really, really good scraps. The crowd was into it. Hasbulla made an appearance. Eric Nixick, John Orlando. The watch-along was a blast. Did you like the morning, afternoon ones, or did you come home feeling like, now what do I do?
I haven't figured it out yet. I keep getting this question and I don't know how to answer it. I mean, there was a nice feeling of coming home and not having anything work related left. You know, you still had a lot of time left in your day. But yeah, I think I did like it.
Would you want it? Would you want it to be the norm?
9 a.m. Yeah,
I don't think
I don't.
I kind of like the Saturday buildup as you start to get to the end. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't despise it. I'll do it once a year. Sure, if you got to do it twice a year, okay, I'm in. But I wouldn't want to do it all the time. And I'm talking about a pay per view with the watch along. I prefer the night buildup. You know, as we get there. Because it messes up the whole week, you know, like, oh, yeah, Thursday night at 10 a.m. is the actual their Friday ceremonials. Like, you're so thrown off, you know, with what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I like waking up on a Friday and saying, okay, here it comes. Is everyone going to make weight? Are the title fights preserved? You know, I like that. So, sure, once a year, okay, twice if we got to do it, but. I remember driving home and going, I'm going to run some errands. Like, the day was still in front of me. Like, I still had plenty of day in front of me.
Yeah.
The bonuses, just to wrap up here, they went to Oliveira and Makachev. So, Makachev got a performance. Jan and O'Malley, they got fight of the night. And Muhammad. Bilal Muhammad, he got a performance of the night. See, I thought Brady and Muhammad could possibly be a fight of the night, but a lot of times when you finish, and I think that one finished, was it in the second round?
That was,
yeah.
To me, that was, it's close, man, but that could have been fight of the night as well.
And if you recall, Ozdemir was putting it on Krylov, and then Krylov flipped the script. So, you know, there could have been maybe an argument there as well. I don't know. Nothing felt like anything you want to, you know, pick it or anything like that. Like, I don't want to go to the UFC offices and pick it until they make things right. No, nothing like that. This, they made the decision. Okay, cool. Whatever. Mm-hmm. And, folks, again, thank you so much for tuning into the watch along on Saturday. It was a blast, and we got Spinning Backclick live. So if you happen to catch this in time, or if not for the following Mondays, catch Spinning Backclick live Mondays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. That's our YouTube channel, and you can check out me and Goz and a few of our panelists from the MMA Junkie family. This week, it'll be Mike Bond and Nolan King. We will be discussing all the latest news, reacting to UFC 280, and, you know, touching on some other topics, maybe rapid fire stuff, challenging each other and, you know, just basically having good discussion over the stuff that pops here in our sport. Anyway, with that, it's been a long week, so we're going to exit. Hope you all have a nice weekend, whatever's left of it. And we'll see you all on Thursday for Thursday show. But don't forget Spinning Backclick. All right, folks, we're out of here. Go out and be a champion.